Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Before the break, we heard about contracting companies that were working on behalf of the poultry plants and hiring undocumented workers. Some of the plants are even hiring the same workers who had been taken away by ICE during the raids in 2019. To really understand how a once fledgling poultry industry became a nearly $50 billion powerhouse that it is today, we need to look back at the racial history of chicken processing plants in the South. All right, we're going to go back to the story now.
The poultry industry really first began gelling as an industry into something of a factory setting around World War II.
That's Angela Stisi again. She's the author of Scratching Out a Living.
And at that time, many men were involved in the war effort, and it was largely women and white women who were recruited to work in those plants.
In Mississippi, these plants were staffed for decades by white working class women up until the civil rights movement.
Once Black folks in Mississippi had gained voting rights and civil rights, their attention turned to economic justice, right? And they were also tired of working in the fields and in domestic work and saw work in chicken plants and other factory settings as really a step up.
In the 1960s, Black workers began organizing for access to these jobs.
It wasn't until the late 60s or even early 70s that the Black workers gained entrance into the chicken plants.
Angela says it was a matter of weeks before the plants went from being mostly manned by white women to becoming an exclusively Black workforce.
What they thought was going to be a racial integration of the plants really became a racial or ethnic succession in the chicken plants, and the plants turned almost exclusively to Black men and women.
After working in the plants and seeing the grueling environment they faced, Black workers began organizing for better wages and working conditions during the 1970s. But Angela says it took some time until they would see any actual gains.
And it was in the mid-90s when the chicken plants were facing the reality that they were going to have to negotiate with unions and with their workers that they had the idea to turn to immigrant labor.
So companies started heavily recruiting immigrant Latino and Latina workers from Florida and Texas.
The story is not complete unless we also think about the ways in which bringing in this workforce was an effort to keep Black workers in their places in the chicken plants.
According to the Economic Policy Institute, it's estimated that there are almost 500,000 workers in the animal slaughtering and processing industry. Of those workers, nearly 35% are Latino, with 70% of those being non-citizens. That amounts to nearly a quarter of this industry being staffed by immigrants. Yesenia is one of those workers in this category. She's also undocumented and from Mexico, and we met her on my first trip here to Mississippi. She and her partner had been picked up by ICE during the raids. Back then, Yesenia was 6 months pregnant, and so she was eventually released. But her partner was detained for almost 9 months. With his absence, Yesenia had to figure out how to provide for her family, and so she returned to the chicken processing plant for work.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Pásale.
With a big smile, Yesenia opens the door and leads me into her home. This is a different place from the last time. It's a lot bigger. Her 8-year-old daughter sits on a stool in the kitchen eating dinner.
What are you eating? What's for dinner?
Spaghetti.
Spaghetti and what?
And chicken? Yeah.
Today was the little girl's first day of school. Then Yesenia's husband appears and says that he's on his way to work with some local folks.
Hola. ¿Cómo le va?
Bien, bien, usted.
When I last saw him, he had literally just been released from an ICE detention center. And, well, he looked pretty traumatized.
Voy a regresar a trabajar en la pollera.
Now he tells me that he wants to go back to work at the chicken processing plants.
Why are you going to go back to work at a place
where there was a raid.
Pues como ahora ya me dieron el permiso de trabajo, ya me siento seguro trabajar ahí.
He has work authorization now, so he says he'd feel more at ease working at the plants.
How did you get that?
Pues le puse el abogado y el abogado me hizo meter el 42B.
He has an attorney who's working with him, and he was able to get work authorization while his immigration case is unfolding.
Wow. Well, I don't know when was the last time I saw one of these. It's like an ID card, an official ID card, you know, with a USA emblazoned seal, and it says United States of America Employment Authorization, and it has his name, and it's valid for 1 year. So then what? Then you have to go back and apply?
Lo tengo que renovar, creo, por un año.
He has to renew this work permit every year. Yesenia also has a kind of work authorization while her immigration case is pending as well. It's only temporary, so she still worries about her future. For now, she has to find a way to feed her family during the pandemic.
Pues al principio todo era normal, pero ya conforme fue avanzando la pandemia, ahora después todos los americanos salieron del trabajo y solo quedamos los hispanos.
Yesenia says at the beginning of the pandemic, the working conditions at the plant were okay. But then people started to not show up to work.
When you say that the only people who ended up working during the pandemic were Latino people, what exactly do you mean?
Que a pesar de que dicen los americanos que nosotros les quitamos su trabajo a ellos, ahora en la pandemia se dieron cuenta que no es verdad, porque todos salieron y decían ellos en arredadas, no, pues qué bueno que se fueron porque no, ellos nos quitan el trabajo.
Yesenia says a lot of people say that Latinos and immigrants are taking jobs away from workers. But during the pandemic, they were at the forefront doing the kind of essential work that others wouldn't do. Yesenia understands that she can still be deported at any moment. Even so, this is not Yesenia's biggest concern right now. I was surprised by this because, in fact, she's worried about something that's currently happening in her community. There have been a series of crimes against Latinos and Latinas, and they remain unsolved.
Por ejemplo, apenas que hubo un caso de que mataron a una mujer hispana embarazada, imagínate. En ese entonces se vivió así el temor entre los hispanos de que, pues el día de mañana puede ser uno.
A 19-year-old pregnant Guatemalan young woman named Maudilia Martina Ramirez Garcia and her brother, Faustino Ramirez Garcia, were killed last December.
Today marks 1 month since the tragic murder of a Guatemalan pregnant woman and her brother in Canton. The case is still open, and those in the Hispanic community are frustrated.
Maudilia's unborn child was also killed. It was labeled a triple homicide. The Canton Police Department says this year there have been 5 murders, 1 Latino and 4 Black people. Canton is a small town of about 12,000, with the majority of the population being Black. Latinos and Latinas constitute about 8% of the racial makeup, but they account for 20% of the murders this year. On top of that, local news outlets say that for more than a decade, the Latino community has been subjected to violence and robberies. Many people we spoke with said that they really worry that they could be next.
So what did the police say?
No sé, o sea, es algo traumatizante. Ya uno duerme con el temor de que, y si nos roban y esto, no se va a hacer justicia porque somos hispanos.
This particular murder has really hit close to home for Yesenia because she's 4 months pregnant. She says she sleeps now with the fear that something could happen to her and her family, and that if something did, she worries that there would be no justice because they are Latinos and they're undocumented. The more I spent time in this community and spoke to people, the more I was able to see that fear was taking over their lives. And it was really hard for me to believe that these crimes remained unsolved. So I went to the Canton Police Department looking for answers.
when I step inside the small lobby of the squat building, I don't see a single soul. There are only glass mirrors everywhere. So all you can see is your reflection. I walk over to an intercom and click a button and try to speak with someone.
Yes, how can I help you?
Hello, yes, Officer Jackson told us to come back to speak with the chief.
I guess Chief Abu, whatever he's done, so I guess it's
got to be
me. Okay, thank you so much.
That's Officer Tanya Jackson. She's a records officer. She takes me past the glass walls into a narrow hallway, and I ask her, what is the general feeling about the community 2 years since the poultry plant raids?
It's pretty much the same. It hasn't really, really changed. They still have their concerns.
What are those concerns as far as you know?
Just as far as police safety, answering their calls, showing them that we are concerned about their well-being and their welfare.
So is there anything else that kind of has stood out in terms of rising crime against these communities that over the past 2 years since the raid?
Not really. It's been pretty much the same.
While Officer Jackson and I speak, Stephen Johnson, the interim assistant chief, stands in the background. So I ask him about the crimes that have taken place in the community.
We have leads, but the problem is getting, I guess, the community to come forward and contribute the information that they have. No law enforcement agency is going to be successful without the community.
How many of your officers speak Spanish?
None at the moment, ma'am. None. We have any.
You're saying that in the entire Canton Police Department, you have not one officer who speaks Spanish?
No, ma'am. No one that's bilingual.
The officers say they don't have anyone on site that is an interpreter, and that if they need someone to interpret, they have to call an outside resource. Leaving the police department, I felt really frustrated. I hopped into the car to meet back up with Lorena, the activist. Tonight, Lorena's organization is hosting a vigil to remember the 2-year anniversary of the ICE raids.
Gracias a todos. Son cuatro pueblos que están teniendo la vigilia y esta va a ser el primero.
She tells the crowd that's gathered here, mostly Latinos and Latinas, some Black folks and white folks, and says that there are 4 towns having similar vigils at the same time. And even though the crowd is small, Lorena is really happy to see community members coming out and organizing. Then a man steps up to the microphone, and Lorena begins to translate in Spanish.
Thank you for having me. You know, I'm born and raised in Mississippi, and it seems like we're always making history the wrong way.
Siempre estamos haciendo historia de la manera equivocada.
They said that our schools are not the best here in Mississippi.
Que nuestras escuelas no son las mejores en Mississippi.
They say that we're the poorest, and now they're saying that we have the largest raid in United States history. And I like to say, you know, we must do better.
He says that the community and the country must hold every administration accountable. Lorena and other advocates are pushing and hoping that the Biden administration will provide a pathway to citizenship immediately for essential workers, something the president said that he would support. When we come back, we hear from 2 Guatemalan families who have planted their roots firmly in Mississippi. But before that, we're going to take a few minutes to ask you to join our team, the team of contributors that makes this public radio station possible. Here's how you can help. And remember, stay with us. No te vayas.